and really figure out who is our child. Who are they? And are there places in our child's life where they have started to become somebody that really isn't them for various reasons? And if so, how can we help with that?
Welcome to the Social Skills Unscripted podcast. I'm Steph, the founder and director of Starfish Social Club and Start a Social Club. I teach neurodivergent kids and teens how to make friends, and I teach people how to start a social club like mine in their own community. My goal with this podcast is to help you, the parents and teachers of neurodivergent kids and teens, learn strategies to help your kids develop social awareness at home, at school, in your clinic, wherever you may be out in the world. Here we go.
Hello and welcome back. I am really glad you're here. This week's episode, I have to say, it's still a little bit random and scrambled in my brain. I don't ever type out or script these episodes. I usually just make some notes on a post-it. Sometimes I'll kind of put things in an order that I think makes sense. But usually I just have a general idea in my brain and then I turn on the camera and I just start talking about it. And usually things come together pretty cohesively. For this topic, I have so many bullet points. I'm not sure if I will mention them all. I'm not sure if they actually all even sync together, but I'm going to go ahead and jump in and we'll see what happens. This episode is, I guess I'll say it's been inspired by something that's been going on in my personal life for the last 6 months or so that I didn't realize the full extent of it until recently. I have had a Facebook account for several years, but I never posted onto my personal page until last March. So sometimes people would tag me in things, so things like that would show up on my page, but I never posted things about my life until a year ago. And the reason I started posting a year ago is because I went on this really amazing adventure to the other side of the world. And I had people telling me, you need to post about that. You need to, I also went by myself. So I think some of it was people's concern about my safety. But people were really encouraging me to post about it and to share about my trip. And so I did. I started posting every day about the things that I was doing and the places I was going, and I would put all my pictures in it. And now I've been posting on my personal page pretty consistently. And now that it's been a little over a year, I'm starting to get my memories on Facebook, which is really amazing because I'm getting the memories from this trip, which was the best month of my life so far. So it's really fun to be able to see what I was doing and where I was a year ago. And I know that as this next year progresses, I'll just keep seeing more of my memories from the last year of my life. And that's pretty awesome. Because I know what memories are coming up on Facebook and I know the timeline of my trip, I know that the day after I'm recording this will be the memory of the last major triathlon I ever did. At the time, I had no idea it would be the last major triathlon I ever competed in. I did not know that at the time. I didn't fully accept that until about 3 months ago. I've talked on this podcast probably quite a bit about triathlon because for 10 years, triathlon has been my primary hobby. 10 years, that's a really long time. It's longer than some of your kids have been around. It's longer than I've been at Starfish Social Club. And triathlon has been a really meaningful, important part of my life for numerous reasons. Most of the people I'm connected to on Facebook are from the triathlon community, including people all over the world, because I've done races in other countries. That's actually what I was doing in New Zealand and Australia a year ago, is I was racing in both of those countries. I've met people from other countries who race. When I was in Puerto Rico, I met somebody from Switzerland who's a triathlete. I have triathlete friends in Canada, New Zealand, Australia, just different places that I've gone and met different people from all over. So triathlon has been such a big part of my life for so long. It's been, like I mentioned, it's been around longer than I've been at Starfish Social Club. It has been around longer than I was married for. I was married when I started doing triathlons, and I'm not anymore. It had my dog who's no longer here. So 10 years is just such a long time to be doing something. About 6 months ago, I went through quite a few major changes in my life. About 6 months ago, I intentionally moved out of Texas. So if you're not that familiar with Starfish Social Club, we were always an in-person business in San Antonio, Texas, started in 2016. And last year, I just felt like I didn't want to live there anymore. I wanted to be able to be other places and do other things. So about 6 months ago, I moved out of Texas for the first time. I've lived in Texas since I was two. So it was my first time living out of Texas as somebody who was capable of making that decision, which also meant that I transitioned Starfish Social Club into an online program, which was like starting completely over. I did have a lot of students from San Antonio that stayed with me and transitioned to Zoom with me. And I'm very grateful for that. And in the last 6 months, I've been getting kids from all over the U.S. now. We have kids from Boston, New Jersey, Florida, California, Ohio, Pennsylvania. So we've gotten kids from lots more states now that we're online. And I've been able to work on one-on-one with kids, even in other countries. I've worked one-on-one with a kiddo from the UK. But it's been like completely starting over. During that time, I also realized that I was no longer going to race in triathlons. And it was a long, kind of drawn out decision process. About 6 months ago, I started, trying to start training again to do maybe another race, and realize there's something really wrong with one of my shoulders and I am incapable of swimming. It's incredibly painful. It's just not happening. And, I have not gone to get it looked at. I don't know what's wrong with it. I just know I am incapable of swimming. And that's the first part of triathlon, is swimming. I do still cycle. It's my favorite thing to do. I actually just came back from a four-day cycling adventure in Moab, Utah, which was really amazing. It was a great time. It was a great adventure. It was really challenging. And then along the way, I guess after the swimming fell off, which made me realize I can't really do triathlons anymore. Around the same time, I recognized that I don't really love running anymore. I just don't really enjoy it anymore. My body doesn't always feel good. I get stomach issues sometimes when I run that I don't get any other time. I just started to realize that I just don't love running anymore. So probably in December, I just made a post on Facebook and announced that I'm no longer doing triathlons. And it was hard for me to come to that decision because I've done it for 10 years. And so much of my time, my energy, my money goes to triathlons. Even as I mentioned, so many of my connections are through triathlon. And so it's become such a core part of my identity. I even have triathlon tattoos. It's become such a core part of my identity. And I realized that that was really a bigger issue, was that it was such a part of my identity. It's so hard to let go of things that we feel like are us. I am a triathlete. It's so hard to let go of that. I'm not a triathlete. I'm Steph. And I can choose different ways to spend my time and my energy and my money. And I can also change my mind. And there's a concept that I feel like we don't give enough credit to. And it's called the fallacy of sunken costs. And it basically says that we humans are more resistant to letting go of something or moving on from something that we've put a lot of time or energy or money into already. We are pretty resistant to letting that go because of how much we've already put into it. So this could be a relationship. This could be a hobby. This could be a degree. It could be a career path. This could be almost anything, but once it could be a vehicle, a house. Once you've put a certain amount of time and effort and energy and money into something, we would prefer to just keep going with it instead of doing something different. And so I definitely was feeling all of this stuff around just finally making the decision that I'm not doing triathlons anymore. And it was pretty emotional. And even when I posted it on Facebook, I had several of my friends in the comments saying things like, "You'll be back," or, "You know, it's okay to just take a break." And I actually kind of thought those were interesting comments because why? Why can't I stop doing something and have that be okay? Why is it not acceptable for me to stop doing this thing I've been doing for 10 years? It's my choice. It's not like anybody's making me leave. It's not like I'm, you know, doing it for any reason other than I don't want to anymore. So it was an interesting period of my life. The whole last 6 months has been really interesting. But coming up on, I know that tomorrow I'm going to get the memory in Facebook about my last big race, which was in Australia a year ago. And it's been bringing up so much about this concept of who we are and why we are who we are. And I've been thinking about it so much for myself personally. I tend to, when I post things on Facebook, I almost use my Facebook page like a journal. I almost use it. I'm very careful about who I friend on Facebook. I really hate that they're called friends because most of them are acquaintances. But I don't friend people I have no contact with. I unfriend from people when we have gone quite a while and had no interaction with each other. I unfriend people who just kind of spew negativity on Facebook. So I'm pretty mindful about who I connect with on my personal Facebook account. And so because of that, I tend to post a lot of kind of vulnerable personal stuff. And so this will be another one of those posts when I make it tomorrow and this memory comes up. It's going to be another vulnerable personal post about me realizing that didn't know it at the time, but a year ago, this was my last big race. And I've been thinking about how things have changed because of me no longer associating with this thing I did for 10 years. And it's been pretty interesting to just think about how things have changed in my life as a result of that. One of the things that I've started to realize kind of more and more lately that the way I was raised was that both my sibling and I were rewarded for our intelligence. That was our biggest kind of currency, I guess, was our intelligence. And so we would get paid for good grades. It was expected that we always had all A's. It was always known that we were going to college. I don't remember about my brother, but I got an academic scholarship to college. It was just, this is the way that it is in this family. You will get good grades. You will be at the top of your class. You will go to college. And I did an episode about how the way we praise our kids can actually really be damaging. And I talked about this a little bit more in depth in that episode, but it just has made me realize that my entire life, I have felt like my value as a person comes from accomplishment and achievement. That's what makes me a valuable person. That's what gives my life purpose and worth and value. So I have 3 degrees. I have a bachelor's degree and 2 master's degrees. I run 2 businesses. I've done triathlon for 10 years, including a full Ironman, which is kind of like the highest level that you can quote unquote achieve in triathlon. I feel like I've done these things in my life. I'm so driven by the concepts of achievement and accomplishment. Even now, one of the things I've transitioned to is I've started traveling, which is something I've never really done before. And I noticed that when I started thinking about where I wanted to go, I would have thoughts like, oh, I can visit all 50 states. Why? Why do I need to do that? What is the point of that? It's just more of that achievement, accomplishment stuff. And I've noticed that, something else, I don't remember specifically what it was, but something else similar came up around travel the other day. That, oh, I could do this and check it all off. No, I don't have to check anything off. There's nothing I have to do to prove my value as a person. I don't have to keep accomplishing and achieving to prove my value as a person. And so that's something I'm really working on personally, is just being more relaxed and being more okay with who I am, regardless of what I'm accomplishing or achieving. And unfortunately, that's been really difficult. It's difficult for me to have days where I choose not to really do anything that day, which as I'm recording this, I've had lots of days like that recently. And I'm learning to be okay with that. I'm learning to be okay with having a day. I don't watch TV very often, but because I have ADHD, if I start watching a show, I will most likely binge that show. I'm not very good with moderation. So I had a couple of days where I was on my couch binging Netflix. and I'm learning to be okay with that. As long as it's not all the time, as long as I haven't watched the entire Netflix catalog, I'm learning to be okay with that. Another thing that I think makes this conversation really relevant, aside from the timing of my life, is that it is April when this is publishing. It is April, which is Autism Awareness Month, which I don't actually ever really talk about. I did an episode about it. I think it was 2 years ago in April. I did an episode about why I really dislike the concept of awareness for anything. Basically, short version is that awareness is like tolerance. Like, I'm aware that you are autistic and I tolerate that. So I'm not a big fan of awareness. I prefer acceptance. I prefer appreciation. Also, awareness tends to only be relevant to people who are already in that community. If you're going to go do, let's just say, a cancer awareness 5K, just as an example, most of the people who are going to participate in something like that or donate to something like that are people whose lives have been touched by cancer. You're not very likely to get people who don't have any personal connection participating or donating to something like that. I saw a post recently of someone whose child has a rare genetic condition, and she was talking about an event that's happening to raise awareness for her son, not her son specifically, but the condition that he has. And I realized that nobody liked or commented or anything because it's not personal to them. It doesn't mean anything to them. And so awareness tends to primarily be distributed amongst people who are already aware. It doesn't tend to reach new people very often. So those are kind of the two things coming together right now, is me recognizing how much my identity has shifted in the last 6 months, and this concept of awareness and acceptance. It also really made me do a lot of thinking about if we want to build awareness and acceptance of things like autism, and even on a broader scale, neurodivergence, if we want to be broader about it, if we want other people to be more aware and accepting of our kids, I think it's also incredibly important that we help our kids be more aware and accepting of other people. There, I don't know how much people outside of where I live are aware of this. This actually happened very close to where I'm living right now. And so I know that here it's pretty well known. But less than a month ago, there was a middle school student who identified as non-binary, got into a fight in the restroom of their school, was found by staff members of the school, was sent home with obvious injuries from this fight. And the next day, they were no longer with us. Police have determined that it was not a result of injuries from the fight, because the initial thought was that these other kids should have legal consequences for this situation. But the police found that the student did not pass away as a result of injuries from the fight. They found that the student actually passed away as a result of their own actions later that night. And so then, to me, the hardest part to wrap my head around is the fact that this happened in a school bathroom. And the fact that there are kids out there, this is middle school, there are kids who have such a problem with the way that other people live their lives and the decisions that other people make, that they would treat another kid like that. That's the part that's been really hard for me to come to terms with. They would physically assault another child because of the decisions this child is making that have nothing to do with them. And in the program at Starfish, we have kids who identify as non-binary. And it's even come up a couple times because we're on Zoom. And so sometimes they will add their pronouns to their name. And not all the kids understand what that means. And so we've had a couple conversations about that, because I at least want to make sure that everybody understands what that means. So after it was determined that this child did not pass away as a result of the fight, but as a result of actions they took after the fight, it was then determined that there was no fault because the fight was mutual. That just came out a couple days ago, that they determined no one was at fault because the fight was mutual, which again is hard for me to agree with when you have somebody who is actively being targeted, harassed, and picked on because of the life choices they're making. It's hard for me to believe that that's a mutual altercation when you have one person from a marginalized group being targeted. But those are the decisions that have been made. Those are the conclusions that have been reached. And so that has really led me to just spend a lot of time, again, contemplating this concept of our identity. And I've heard this quote. I don't know. I don't have it, a copy of it, and I'm not sure where it came from, but basically the gist of it is, we aren't learning who we are as we get older. We're unlearning who we thought we were. And that quote really resonates with me, because I think we're all our truest selves when we're about 4 and 5 years old. I think we can look at 4 and 5 year olds and we can have a good idea of what that child enjoys, what they like, who they are, what's important to them, what's meaningful to them, what their personality is like. And then kind of society at large just jumps in and we start kind of molding kids into what we think they should be in order to have a job, in order to get accepted to college, in order to have friends, in order to fit in, whatever the case may be, in order to not be so difficult. And I think a lot of the personalities, especially of our kids, tend to get smushed in the process. And so part of my goal with this episode is to see if we can do a little digging and really figure out who is our child. Who are they? And are there places in our child's life where they have started to become somebody that really isn't them for various reasons? And if so, how can we help with that? One story I heard, this was a while ago, I was listening to a podcast. I have no idea what the topic was. I don't know who the person was. Just this one thing about it stuck out for me. At the beginning, the guy was talking about, I think he's a famous author or something, I don't even remember, but he was talking about his teenager and that they wanted to dye their hair blue, if I remember correctly. And the point that he was trying to make was that anytime somebody wants to do something outside of the norm, kind of outside of the social norm, we should do more research and more digging and try to figure out what's the real reason behind that. And so his story and his point was that he talked to his daughter about it and discovered that several of the other girls her age were dyeing their hair different colors. And so really her intention was to be like these other kids. And so once he figured that out, they were able to have conversations around her need and her desire to be like the other kids. So far I'm on board, right? I get that. I can see where we're going with this. But then he ends this portion of the interview by saying that, you know, he and his daughter came to an agreement that she didn't need to dye her hair blue in order to get what she was looking for. And then he says, which is good because I never would have let her do it in the first place. And that's when I was out. because I don't understand the need for control over something like that. I don't get it. It doesn't hurt a teenager in any way to do something like dye their hair blue. I have had my hair dyed blue, and it doesn't even last very long. but it doesn't, it's not damaging or hurting anything. And so that was such an interesting response to me that he would not allow her to do that. And I think one of the reasons that was interesting to me is I feel like I had similar experiences growing up where there were so many things that just weren't allowed. That the expectation of me and my brother was that we were the typical traditional kids. So we weren't allowed to do things that made the family look bad, or, you know, just things that were deemed socially unacceptable or, you know, any other kind of unacceptable. And my brother and I, we're both in our early 40s now. We were both not covered isn't the appropriate word. We both have multiple tattoos. I don't remember when his started. Mine started when I was 18. Mine started as soon as I went to college. By the end of my first year in college, I had 3 tattoos. By the end of my second year in college, I had 3 tattoos along with my belly button, my tongue, my nose, and both my eyebrows pierced by the time I finished my second year in college, which was pretty humorous because I was in college on an academic scholarship. I was on the dean's list in college, and yet I would get followed around. I remember I went to the mall in my small college town, and I was in a Christmas store, and the security guard was following me around. I don't have tattoos and piercings because I'm rebellious. I don't have them as a way to get back at my parents for being so strict. It has nothing to do with anybody except me. I don't even have them because other people have them. Actually, to me, tattoos are a sign of individuality. I had somebody copy one of my tattoos one time, and I was like, pretty offended by that. She literally saw my feet, and she saw it and took a picture of it, and then came in a week later, we worked together, and showed me that she had gotten the exact same tattoo on her feet. And I was actually quite offended by that, because I see tattoos as a way to be an individual, that they are about you and what's important to you and what's meaningful to you. So I think for me, the concept of not allowing a teenager to dye their hair blue, that's just not something I understand. Especially if, you know, there could be, what's the word I'm thinking of? There could be oh, I can't think of the word, but expectations that maybe you do it over holiday break, summer break, maybe a time, you know, not all schools allow that. So maybe it's during a time when there's a break from school. But I think there's lots of things like that that kids want to experiment with and try that have, there's no harm to them. They're just something that kids eat, temporary tattoos, right? But these are things that can be done on a holiday break or a summer break, maybe even with the understanding that it's gone by the time you go back to school, that it's not a long-term thing. But I guess I just don't understand having the hard line that you wouldn't allow your child to do that. I think we, you know, we all, especially those of us with ADHD, we learn so much just by experiencing things. There could be something that 10 people have told us not to do, and we will only learn that when we go do it ourselves. Oh, okay. So let's talk about, with all this in mind, let's talk about who is your kid? Who are they? How are they showing up in the world? And is this really them? Is this really your true kid? In my experience, personal and professional, most autistic kids do a pretty good job of showing up as who they are, unless they also have anxiety. Because unfortunately, that anxiety causes them to care sometimes too much about what other people think. And it causes them to try almost too much to be like everybody else. And then you get autistic burnout. And this can even be in kids. This can be in kids who spend their whole day at school trying not to stand out. And so by the time they get home, they're emotionally and mentally exhausted. You can get this in adults at work who are trying to meet all the demands of their position or the expectations of their supervisor, even though the way their brain is wired doesn't really allow for that to happen without maybe having some accommodations. You can have this in relationships with people feeling like they need to be a little bit different in order for them, for someone to love them more or to want to be with them. With ADHD, I feel like we do a really good job of being ourselves when we are around other people like us. I think even at Starfish Social Club, just seeing the kids authentically interact with each other, it's just one of my favorite things that happens in my life is just being able to hang out and watch the kids authentically interact with each other, because nobody's belittling anybody for anything. Nobody's putting anybody down. Even times where I remember we had a high school student talking about cartoons. We have a college age student that really likes to watch shows that are more geared toward kids. But nobody is rude or disrespectful to each other based on what they enjoy or based on their hobbies or based on, even some of our kids have speech impediments. I mentioned some of our kids are non-binary. Some of our kids have different religions. Some of our kids, there's just so many things, you know, every one of our kids is so different. But in our environment, they're all so different. And so there's not judgment or shaming around kids' differences. So I think there are times and places where our kids show up as their authentic selves. And there are times and places where they have learned not to. I think it's really important that we identify which is which. Where are the places and when are the times that our kids feel most comfortable being who they are? And where are the places and when are the times that they don't? And is there anything we can do about that? I am a huge believer in the concept of school choice. I am on the board of a charter school in San Antonio. I have worked in neighborhood public schools, charter schools, and private schools. I am just a huge believer that we all deserve choice in everything. So I don't think any school type is better or worse than any other school type. I think different school types work better for different types of kids. So I think that's a great place to start is school. Who does your kid show up as when they're at school? Are they stressed out? Are they anxious? Are they avoidant? Or are they ready to go and they're calm and they're comfortable? Who does your kid show up as in their extracurricular activities? What about when they're hanging out with the people that they consider to be their friends? Who do they show up as? Speaking of friends, one of the big changes that's happened as a result of me no longer participating in triathlons is that people who used to be my friends have now become my acquaintances. I've definitely noticed that also because I moved. So I no longer live where I used to live, and I'm no longer engaging in this hobby I used to engage in. And there's a concept when it comes to people in our lives that people, I've heard it said a couple different ways, but the one that I like the best, because it rhymes, is that everybody is in our life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. I think a reason is just something that happens and you and this other person become connected, but you may never actually see or talk to them again. You're just connected because of this one thing that happened, which could be long-term. It doesn't necessarily have to be like one instance in time. It could be long-term, but it's if that reason didn't exist, you and this person would not be connected. A season is a period of time. Usually it's when both of you are in kind of the same season. For example, it could be that you guys are neighbors. In the case of our kids, it could be a school year. Maybe they're connected to this other kid because they sit next to each other. But the next year, they're not in the same class anymore. So that would be more like a season. For me, triathlon. Now that I'm not in triathlon anymore, I'm noticing how many of the people in my life were only there for a season. The season happened to be a decade, but I'm noticing how many people are just kind of no longer engaging. Even when I post things on, you know, on social media, they're just no longer engaging because I'm not talking about triathlon. It's interesting, actually. Even, you know, Starfish Social Club, there are some people who engage with Starfish Social Club for a reason. Maybe they just wanted a one-on-one session. Maybe they just want an 8-week session and then they're gone. There are people who are here for a season, which obviously is an indeterminate amount of time. People who are here for a year. There are kids who've been here for 6 years, but regardless, it's a season, right? I'm not going to still be supporting these kids 20 years from now, because that season will have come and gone. One of the things that I think is important to recognize about this is sometimes our kiddos will make decisions based around people who are in their life for a reason or a season. A great example of this, in our last module that we just finished, when we were talking about conversations, and one of the things I teach the kids is that if they're joining a conversation that's already happening, like school cafeteria is a great example, passing periods is a great example, the lounge at work is a great example. If you're joining a conversation that's already happening, what most people tend to do is join conversations based on who is in those conversations. Who are the people having that conversation? What I teach the kids to do is join the conversation based on the topic of the conversation, as opposed to who's in the conversation. But most people tend to gravitate towards certain other people. From a conversational perspective, this may mean that we end up in a conversation that we don't care at all about just because of the people that are in it, when there's another conversation happening a table away that would actually be an amazing conversation for us to be a part of. So sometimes we can limit our opportunities because we follow people instead of occurrences, events, opportunities, options. And of course, when our kids are teenagers, people are the basis of their life. Their social interactions are the most important thing. But sometimes our kids make choices based on other kids who are in their life for a reason or a season. And sometimes we enable that as well. Sometimes we keep setting up hangouts or play dates with this kid who was our neighbor 5 years ago. They're not our neighbor anymore. And I don't even know if my kid really even likes hanging out with them. But we, as the adult, may still be clinging on to that. They were in our life for a season, and we keep trying to hold on to that instead of recognizing that maybe the kids don't even care that much about spending time together. There are other kids that your kid may be much more interested in spending time with. I think paying attention to how our kids show up in different environments, paying attention to how they show up around different people. Another suggestion I have is to expose our kids to a lot of different experiences and opportunities. And I know that sounds a little counterintuitive when we're talking about, especially autistic kids, who tend to like sameness, consistency, routine. It can be really challenging to expose them to a lot of different things when that's not really what most autistic people are designed to want in their lives. For ADHD, usually we're like, yeah, something different every week. But most people's brains are naturally wired for consistency and sameness. So I want to give you a couple strategies on how you can expose your child to different things. From a personal perspective, I think this is incredibly important. And I think it's something that I didn't have growing up. And I think it really, even now, at the age I am now, I learn about things, I read about things, I experience things that I was just never aware of. I just didn't even know. And I've gotten past the point where I feel sorry for myself and I can't believe I've lived this long without knowing these things or having these things or doing these things. I've gotten past that point. And I'm now at the point where I think I have the rest of my life to know these things and have these things and do these things. But I think just being able to, I'll give you guys some examples. Even in the last year of my life, when I went on this trip last year to New Zealand and Australia, it's the first time in my life that I've left North America. First time in my life. I am in my 40s. in November, for the first time in my life, I took a surfing lesson. Might not seem like that big of a deal, but y'all, I grew up on the beach for the first 18 years of my life. Well, from 2 to 18, I lived in a town on the beach. But in November, it's the first time I ever took a surfing lesson. In December was the first time I ever took an ice skating lesson, which makes a little more sense since I grew up in Texas, but there are ice skating places in Texas. They're just not outside, right? They're all artificial and in a mall somewhere. But the first time in my life I'd ever done an ice skating lesson. My first scuba diving lesson also in November. I've done snorkeling. It's my first scuba diving lesson. I just started hiking in October. I didn't even walking around in the woods. Just started hiking in October. There's just all these things that I've just never been exposed to, never experienced, never done. And I think it's easy for our kiddos to get kind of stuck in that as well if they are resistant to doing things that are different or things that are new. So here's some suggestions that I have. One suggestion is, depending on kind of the adventurous level of your kid and your family, once a month or once a week, doing something that's new or different. Once a week or once a month. It could be going somewhere you've never been before. It could even be something like eating dinner somewhere you guys have never eaten before. It could be trying an activity that you've never done before. It could be volunteering. You know, there's so many different ways to volunteer that maybe once a month you do a different volunteer activity. You can look on Groupon is a great place to look. Just what are some classes that are happening? I know when I look on Groupon, there's things like stained glass making classes, chocolate making classes, fencing classes. There's just so many different things. If you're looking at just activities, what's a 2-hour activity we can do this month? There's things like axe throwing, escape rooms, right? There's just so many different things. I think the more often we do anything, the more comfortable it becomes. So I would go for once a week instead of once a month, because once a month is like, we might be dreading this for 30 days until it happens again. But once a week starts to just become routine. I actually, since I no longer live in Texas, the biggest thing I miss is Mexican food, like good Mexican food. And so I'm on a mission where I live now. I'm a Google reviewer. And so I go around and I'm looking for good Mexican food. And I'm like, I think I've gone to maybe 8 places and only 2 of them have been decent. But people where I live just don't know that it's not decent. And so I even before I recorded this, I was literally driving to an appointment and saw a Mexican restaurant I've never heard of before. And so I just stopped and ate there. So I do that very often just with eating. I have no problem just going somewhere new. Now that I'm traveling a lot, I'm going places I've never gone before, because that's kind of the point to me, is to go somewhere I've never gone before. And some of them are not that far away. My kitty and I just came back from a trip to Arizona and Utah. Never been to Utah. It is not that far from me. Like, there's not really a reason I've never been there. But Arkansas, over the holidays, my kitty and I took a road trip to Arkansas. It's not that far from me. There's not a reason I've never been there. So just making it a routine and part of your family structure that you do new things. And again, it can be whatever your family likes. It can be going to a different park every Saturday. You know, it can be doing a day trip once a month. Whatever your family likes. Even at Starfish Social Club, when we were in person, we would do outings once a month. But the expectation was that we had to go somewhere different every other time, because the kids kept wanting to go to the same places. So we got pretty stuck on trampoline parks, but we went to like 6 different trampoline parks because I didn't want to go, just keep going to the same one. So we got kind of stuck on trampoline parks, but at least we were going to different ones. At least it wasn't the same one every time. So even something like that, putt-putt golf, bowling, even if it's the same activity, where else can you do that activity? Okay. So that's a suggestion I have for just helping your kiddo experience new and different things. I often wonder if there are things that we could have been really genius at, but we've never been exposed to them. And even like, this is a really silly example, but like, is there something that your kid could go to the Olympics for, but they've never been exposed to it? I just think about stuff like that sometimes. I was exposed to so little growing up. Like, we lived in a very small town, 45 minutes away from the closest city, which was a really small podunk city to begin with. There's not a lot happening when I grew up. And then I went to college in a small town. So I didn't grow up being exposed to much at all. Okay, I think I've made that point. But I really am a big believer in just exposing your kiddo to different things. It also builds self-confidence. It builds independence. It builds decision-making, problem-solving, social skills. I mean, there's just so many benefits to being able to expose our kids to different things. And if you are not interested in that, like I'll say, one of my parents growing up, very sedentary, totally fine just sitting around the house all day, every day. If you are not interested in doing different new things with your kiddo, find someone who is. It could be a babysitter. Maybe you sign them up for certain types of classes or clubs. It doesn't even have to be you. It could be somebody, you know, somebody that you hire or somebody that you know, or a group that's already doing things like that, that you can plug your kiddo into. It could be, maybe you swap with someone else's kid. Maybe you really like going to see a different movie every week, but your kid wants to go do something active. Maybe you can swap with somebody else's kid. which also makes me think about the concept of quitting things. I heard, it was some documentary I was watching, it was years ago, about an Olympic gymnast. And I don't remember who the gymnast was, but she was talking about how when she was growing up, there were so many times that she wanted to quit. Very understandable, right? Actually, not a fan of child athletes. Not a fan of that. I think people need to be old enough to make their own decisions before they get put into a life like that. But I digress. So she was saying that I don't remember if it was her mom or her grandmother that she grew up with, but basically that the rule was she could quit at any time as long as that decision was made when she'd had a good session. And I love that. I really love that. Because we all get tired of things and want to quit things when they're rough and when they're difficult and when they're not fun. Right? We all feel that way about stuff. But we don't usually feel that way when we're having a good time and it's fun. And I even use this sometimes at Starfish Social Club. Sometimes I'll have parents that email me and say, hey, so-and-so didn't have a great time today. He's saying he doesn't want to go back. And one of the things that I will suggest is next time they're here, take a picture of them when you guys are leaving. Because almost every time that we finish a session at Starfish, a group session, or even a one-on-one session, kids are in a great mood. Like, we've had a great time. Sometimes things get a little bit awkward. Sometimes somebody doesn't have a great time. Totally fine. Totally expected. But take a picture of them next time they're leaving and then remind them that almost all the time, they actually have a good time. You can do the same with your kiddos. Let's say you sign them up for a season of baseball. They can quit at any time as long as they quit on a day that they had fun, because they're not very likely to do that. Unless, of course, obviously there are caveats to this. If there's issues with, you know, other people on the team, if there's issues with other kids, if there's issues with the coach, obviously some discretion has to come into play here. But in general, you quit when you're having a good time. My last two races for triathlon, second to last race, my last three races were New Zealand and Australia. Oh my gosh. In New Zealand, I got my record for my fastest swim ever. Chicken, I've been racing for 10 years. And in Australia, I got my record for my fastest run ever. And then back home, I did a race at the end of May, which I didn't know at the time would be my last race. And I got my fastest bike time for that distance of a course ever. And I had a bunch of friends that did that race because it was a local one. It's great times. All three of those races were so fun. So I didn't leave triathlon because I was upset and angry and bitter. I left it because I just realized after taking a break for a bit that number one, I can't swim anymore. And number two, I just don't really enjoy running anymore. That's it. And I still cycle. So it's not like I've completely abandoned it and I, you know, have bad feelings about it. I still cycle. My bike is, aside from my cat, my bike is probably the most important possession that I have. I won't say aside from my cat because she's not my possession. She is a being who has chosen to live her life with me. So my bike is probably the most important possession that I have. It's very meaningful to me. It's very special to me. So allowing our kids to let things go, but having it be on good terms, not when they're angry and frustrated and annoyed, but if they have a good practice or a good session or a good time with this other kid, but they still don't really think it's something they want to do again, that's when I think it's really valid and really legitimate. Okay, let me check my bullet points and see if there is anything else that I want to talk about today. Well, the only other thing that I don't think I touched on is, okay, just really paying attention to what makes your kid happy, especially the younger they are, because that's when I think you get a really genuine read on that. What makes your kid happy? And an interesting side note about this, when I was six, maybe, I was on a soccer team in my town, and the story goes that I didn't play much time. I didn't spend much time playing soccer. I spent a lot of time climbing the trees. And what's interesting about that is that I haven't, aside from triathlon, I haven't been much of an outdoor person as an adult. I don't really enjoy camping. Like, I just haven't been much of an outdoor person. And even triathlon, it's all got a purpose, right? You're swimming in a lake or a river, you're riding your bike somewhere, there's a purpose to it all. But now that I'm not doing triathlon anymore, I love to be outside. That's actually how I spend most of my time when I'm traveling, is I go to places where I can just be outside. I go to national parks. I go to just tourist places that are outside. I'm not so interested in museums and things like that unless the weather's bad. If the weather's good, I just want to be outside. And so when I think about that, I think I was showing that when I was a kid, that I just wanted to run and play outside. But then I've spent most of my life not running and playing outside. I think triathlon was almost like a socially acceptable way for me to run and play outside. So what are the things that you notice make your kid happy? What are the things that we can promote more of? Are they really happy when they're building? Are they really happy when they're drawing? Are they really happy when they're running around outside? Are they really happy when they're creating something? Are they really happy when they're taking care of your pets or someone else's pets? Are they really happy when they're learning something new? Are they really happy when they're figuring something out? What is it that makes your kid really happy? And how can we create more of that for them? I do have one more point I want to make. Just kind of random tie-in back to when I was talking about acceptance and appreciation and all that kind of stuff, and how I believe that it's important for us to teach our kids to be accepting and aware of everybody, regardless of what they believe or how they live their lives. And I think just this concept that goes around sometimes about how if we teach kids about X, whatever you want to insert for X, it will make them become X, right? That's an argument you hear sometimes. If we teach kids about being gay, it will make them become gay. if we teach our kids about, I don't know, what's another good one for that? Even a different religion, it will make them become that religion. And that's just absolutely not true. But what I do believe, I don't believe it makes them become something that they weren't already. I believe it makes them, it makes it okay for them to be that thing. And I have an example of this that sticks in my brain. This was years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. I had a student at Starfish for a couple years, and he was, 12, 13, 14, 15. I had him, kind of for a span. And I could just observe him. And I really felt like when I observed him, that if he knew what it meant to be gay, that he would identify with that. But I could also tell that he didn't know. It was like I could tell that he was not even aware that was a thing. He went to a very small private religious school, so he wasn't really exposed to stuff like that naturally, like some of our kids in larger schools are. And I just remember feeling like, I wonder how old he's going to be when he's at least exposed to that concept. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he wouldn't identify with it. But I remember just feeling bad for him that he didn't even know that was a thing. It's almost like if any of you listening were diagnosed like I was late in life, and it's like you never even knew the whole time that this was a thing and that you could be this thing. And there's this feeling of like, God, I wish I would have known 20 years ago. Even for some of our kids, maybe they weren't diagnosed till they're 15. And you have that feeling as a parent, I wish I would have known when she was 5. And so I just feel the same way for the choices that we are all able to make for ourselves. The choices of the religion that we choose to believe in, the choices of the holidays we choose to celebrate, the choices of the gender we choose to identify with. I just think there's the people that we choose to love. I think sometimes I don't believe that exposing our kids to these concepts makes them these things. I think it makes it okay for them to be these things. And I have to say, the couple of kids that I've had in the program that identify as non-binary actually makes me so proud. It makes me proud of them for choosing to identify the way that they believe, because I know there's a lot of kids who don't, out of fear or intimidation or whatever. It makes me very proud of the kids for choosing to identify in the way that feels right to them. The same, I've had kids as young as 11 talk about being gay or bisexual. Kids as young as 11 have had conversations with me about that. And again, I'm so proud of them for honoring how they feel. Sometimes it's not always long-term. Sometimes it may be something somebody's exploring and kind of thinking about. And sometimes, they may change their minds later. But regardless of whether it's temporary or forever, it makes me really proud of these kids for being brave enough to acknowledge who they feel like they are. And makes me really proud of their parents for being open to that, for being accepting of their kids. And it's a different paradigm. Even me with, one of our kids, both of the kids that I've had in the program that identify as non-binary have chosen to go by a different name. And so sometimes it's even hard for me to just remember that they prefer to be called this or to remember what their preferred pronouns are. And it's not any maliciousness on my part. It's simply just, you know, I'm in my 40s. We get pretty habituated to people being one gender or the other, the older we are. And so I've talked to several parents who, gosh, are just putting in so much love and time and effort into parenting the child that is showing up in front of them. And I just think that's so brave and courageous and amazing to parent the child that shows up in front of you. Whether that's a child who's autistic or ADHD or non-binary or gay or whatever, whatever it is, whether they decide they're going to practice a different religion than you practice, whatever the case may be. I just feel like it's really brave of kids. And I feel like it's really brave of parents to be able to honor and respect their kids for being who they are. Okay, I think that's it. I think I actually hit on all my bullet points. But yeah, I hope this was helpful as I'm going through my own transitions and just recognizing how it's changing my identity a bit. It's also helping me realize that I created that identity, that it's not, you know, it's not a part of me. It's this thing I created, and I can also create a different one. And so I think the same for our kids, that we all come into this world the way that we are, but sometimes along the way, things get created for us. It also means that we can uncreate them. Okay. Thank you for being here. I'm really glad that you're here, and I'll see you again next week. Thank you as always for joining me. If you aren't already part of my community, you can find me at starfishsocialclub.org. There you can join my email list, find some free resources to help with your kiddos, join the waiting list for my program, and learn how I can help you start your own club like mine. I'll see you there.